I'm Laura Kiernan. This is Perspectives. Dayton Duncan's new book, Miles from Nowhere, is a portrait of the men and women who live in some of the least populated areas of the American West. He calls it the contemporary frontier. Duncan said he hopes in the future readers will turn to his book and find a portrait of real life.
We live in a celebrity age, and quite often the coverage of the celebrities is abysmal and shallow. And I think that what I would hope that of the books that I've written so far and of the work I would hope to do in the future, that somebody could pick my book up and read it 50 years from now, 100 years from now, and be taken to a place and meet people who tell them something about what life was like then. And I don't think 100 years from now somebody reading about Cher or Michael Jackson is going to get the feel of what life was like for most people. They might get a feel for what the interests of the media was in that age. But so I've got this interest in people and places that normally don't get written about. And secondly, I've got this intense passion for the West and for open spaces. And a lot of times the articles I write or the books I write are an excuse for me to go out and wallow in openness.
And the people you wrote about live in areas where there are fewer than two people per...
Yes, fewer than two people per square mile used to be the definition by the Census Bureau of where the frontier existed. And 100 years ago, Frederick Jackson Turner, the historian, using Census Bureau data, said that the frontier had closed. And yet in 1990, 100 years later, 132 counties in the western contiguous states still are under 2 people per square mile. 2 people per square mile would be New Hampshire with 18,000 people in the whole state. So that gives you a little bit of a feel of what sparsity really is in those places.
What was it like for you when you first arrived there? What was the first place that you visited?
The first place I spent any real time in is the subject of the first chapter. It's Garfield County, Montana, on the eastern plains of Montana. Garfield County is in size, geographic size, bigger than the state of Connecticut, but it only has 1,400 people living in it. Only has one town, the county seat, Jordan, which itself only has about 300 people. What struck me in that county and every place else was, number one, you go through sort of a bends. You know, you drive, if you're driving at night, there are no lights. Distances between towns or even just ranches stretch your whole concept of what the word neighbor means. So there's, first of all, the sense of the awesomeness of space and geography and terrain and climate. Then as you spend some time in Jordan, Montana, or any of the other places I went, the other thing that strikes you is just the reverse of that, is how close-knit the communities are. Everybody knows one another and knows their history and knows every little bit about them because there aren't very many people, and so whether you really like them or not, they're your neighbor, and you got to rely on them and sometimes.
How did they react to you?
Generally pretty good. I mean, I have a genuine interest in people, and I think that once they get over reluctance that I wasn't somebody there that thought that they were just these quaint exhibits of some, you know, museum of the bizarre, that I actually was interested in them and interested in their place and its history. They're Westerners, and they're very open, and they, you know, gave me a place to sleep, fed me, and often shared a lot of stories about themselves that if you give them time enough to talk, then they will.
I'm talking to Dayton Duncan. He's the author of Miles from Nowhere. I'm curious, did anybody throw you out, turn you away, call you a nasty Easterner?
Well, I was living, for the purposes of this book, my family and I moved out to Kansas, and so I was traveling in a beat-up old GMC Suburban with Kansas plates. And sometimes I wondered if I had pulled into town in a Saab with New Hampshire plates or, New York, or even worse, California, what their initial reaction would be. I had some people who were just, you know, didn't want to talk and were suspicious of me, but I can't remember any downright nasty folks. In Loving County, Texas, which is the most sparsely settled county in the United States, there's only 111 people in the whole county. Everybody there hates each other, even though they live in Loving County. They were very open and friendly with, as long as I would sit there and listen to them badmouth somebody else in town. Sort of like I was the only non-combatant in Loving County. And so they were nice to me, but they had, horrible things to say about their neighbors.
Did they have an agenda that they wanted to discuss with you? I mean, were there things on their mind?
Yeah, I think for a little bit, a lot of these people feel, and rightly so, that most of America condescends to them whenever most of America even bothers to think about people that live in sparse places. They think that they're backward, that they're yokels, that they must be dumb, not very ambitious. And so they wanted me to make sure that I got to understand that they're not that. And also it was important for them, in all the places I went, that I had understand that they live there by choice, that they don't feel trapped there. That it's not a case where if they wanted to leave, they couldn't. And I think that was very important to them, and I hope it comes through in my book about what kind of people they are. They're tough. They're very independent, but, they grew up there, and that's their place. They identify with it. It's not a place where people, go to vacation. It's not a place where they'd have second homes. And to those instances where I found places of people thought, well, wouldn't this be nice to get away from it all? And those people usually that tried it lasted about 6 months and they were gone.
Because, why?
Well, it's everything is so different. You've got a long distance to go. If you want to go see a movie, it's half a day drive or more. If you forget the milk at the grocery store, it's a 2-hour drive. It's a place where there's often no doctor. And it's a place where nature itself demands attention. It's a place where if you get caught in a storm, it's not an inconvenience. It's life-threatening. And so it's got this harshness to it that in certain lights is very intriguing. But if you just went there for a change of pace, it's not a change of pace. It's a change of life. And most people from densely populated places can't make that transition.
How did you choose the locations that you eventually put in the book?
Well, I went to all 132 counties over a year's time, a little over a year's time, using Census Bureau data to find out which ones were under 2 people per square mile. And then I chose the ones to write about by the ones that had stories that I thought were either compelling in their own right, talking about the sheriff in the county where the sheriff killed Billy the Kid allows me to tell a historical story about what violence was like on the old frontier, and the fact that the sheriff in that same place was getting run out of office for giving out too many traffic tickets tells you a lot about a transition of 100 mm-hmm. years. So there are times when the story was compelling. Other times I wanted to make sure that the stories I told were representative. Garfield County, Montana, the fact that it doesn't have a doctor, the fact that it has only one high school, that it deals with this notion that there's people in other parts of the country that want to turn part of it into sort of a big game preserve. There's a lot of issues that it was facing that other places were facing. So I tried to make sure that I went to as many places, talked to as many people before I made up my mind what it was I was going to write about.
My guest is the writer Dayton Duncan. He lives in Walpole. You told me that you and Ken Burns, the filmmaker, who's a neighbor of yours in Walpole,
right,
that the two of you are working on or planning a production about the West.
We've already started work on a large series that will broadcast on the fall of 1996. It's a little early to program your VCR, but it will be in the fall of 96, and it will cover the history of the American West. It'll be about 10 hours, like the Civil War series was, and it will cover the history of the West from before there were any white people there up until the early parts of the 20th century. It's a big undertaking, and we've been working on it about 2 years already.
We'll continue our conversation with Dayton Duncan, but let's take a break now and check in with our fall membership drive. I'm Laura Kiernan. This is Perspectives. I'm Laura Kiernan. This is Perspectives, and we're joined today by the author, Dayton Duncan, whose most recent book is Miles from Nowhere, Tales from America's Contemporary Frontier. You've had another life here in New Hampshire and around the country in politics. Have you given it up?
Well, no. I mean, politics is part of my blood. I believe in politics. I learned it from former Governor Hugh Gallon here in New Hampshire, who sort of yanked me out of journalism and gave me the opportunity to see politics and government from the inside. And I learned an awful lot from him and from that experience about the possibilities of politics. And I believe very strongly in it. And so I'm not actively trying to be a political handler or operative, but politics. I'm a political junkie. I keep track of it. I believe in it, and I take part in it to the extent that I can right now, which is to do it other than to have it as a job.
Now, you were the deputy press secretary for Walter Mondale, and you were called in, I guess is the way to put it.
Dragooned into the Dukakis campaign in 1988.
Right, and since then, you've not been actively involved.
Well, there's a certain number of people, friends of mine, who point out that ever since I got out of Democratic politics, the Democrats took over the White House again. So they may be wishing that I will stay out of it in that respect. I was out in Kansas during the 92 primary, and I'm a longtime acquaintance of and supporter of Bill Clinton. I met him in 1979 with Governor Gallon. They'd both been elected that same year and became very good friends. In fact, interestingly, in 1980, after Gallon won re-election the first time, Clinton had lost his first bid for re-election, and I placed the call for Hugh Gallon to young Bill Clinton, and I remember standing there in the governor's office as Hugh Gallon told Clinton to not give up, to try to figure out what it was that had caused him to be voted out of office, and told him he was still young, and Gallon himself had lost elections in the past, and he said, just keep coming back and coming back. You've got a lot to offer. And being at the inauguration 12 years later was quite an experience for me. So I helped out. I have a lot of friends who were in the White House and a lot of friends who worked on that campaign, and I would give them free advice from by telephone from Kansas during the primary. And
did you talk to Clinton himself?
I did not. No, I talked to the people who, like Mark Guerin, who's now the communications director, and George Stephanopoulos. It made me feel kind of old. You know, all the people who had worked for me in different campaigns are now running the country, and so I feel a little young to feel that old. But there you have it. But I give them free advice, and I think they probably put about that much value on it. It's free, and so they feel free to ignore it.
We're talking to Dayton Duncan. He wrote a book called Grassroots, which was a detailed account of a group of
primary.
People who worked at the very fundamental levels in the 88 primary in New Hampshire. There's a lot of talk, I think, that the type of politics, that type of true grassroots, hand-to-hand combat that New Hampshire is specialized in, will go by the boards because of the technology of campaigning. Do you think that will happen?
Well, I think to a certain extent it already has. One of the reasons that I wrote Grassroots, you know, following these individual volunteers for a whole year, Republicans and Democrats, liberals and conservatives, to chronicle what their experience was like, was because in my other campaign existences, with the Mondale campaign, for instance, in the national campaign, I realized how unique New Hampshire's politics are in the primary, and how special that is, and how the meaning of politics is being lost. And part of that is because it is being lost. Part of it is because, again, it's like we were talking earlier about celebrity journalism. Political journalism has become celebrity journalism. It's all, you know, not just the candidates, but what the campaign manager's thinking, what this is doing. And the whole message of it is that it doesn't have any connection to average people. To a certain extent, politicians are to blame for that.
Right. I mean, they promote that to some extent, don't they? President Clinton's Hollywood connections and movie stars at the inauguration and sleeping in the Lincoln bedroom and Barbara Streisand to dinner. I mean, in a way, is that glitz
self-produced? Well, it's partly self-produced, and it's also partly media-produced. But what I was interested in is that sort of lingering ember of belief that what happens in an election has a personal meaning to somebody. And secondly, what I call the democratic covenant, that the outcome is relevant to the person and that the person is relevant to the outcome. And that doesn't have to mean that it's, you know, it can be as simple as I'm going to go vote. Or it can be, in New Hampshire's case, by my personal effort for Jack Kemp or Jesse Jackson, I might make this person president of the United States. That is the person being relevant to the outcome. And on the other hand, it's that, you know, it might be as crass as, if I support George Bush, he'll make me chief of staff in the White House. Or it might be, if I help Michael Dukakis get elected, maybe there will be a peace treaty with the Soviet Union. You know, it's somehow going to be relevant to me. And that sense is that two-way bargain is being lost as we focus only on, you know, sound bites and everything else. So by focusing on these volunteers in Grassroots, I wanted to chronicle that experience. And I think it will survive here in New Hampshire. It's an anachronism for presidential politics. But it's still there.
Did you find some people, though, were disheartened about the direction that politics is taking?
Well, not just disheartened. I mean, I try to be as honest in my writing as possible, whether I'm writing about rural Westerners or New Hampshire people working on a presidential primary. It's not all quaintness. And there's an element in New Hampshire that seems to look at the New Hampshire presidential primary as a God-given right, that, you know, somehow we are special. And that just ain't so. And they take advantage of it. And they make a bad name for New Hampshire by it, by sort of shaking down the candidates for, you know, a job. I'll only talk to you about supporting you if I'm going to get a job on your campaign. Or, you know, I'm so used to being called by governors and senators and would-be presidents that, you know, unless you call me five times, forget about me supporting you. Well, that, you know, I saw that from the outside working on presidential campaigns, that people from the outside would come in and they'd say, Jesus, you don't understand. You've got this opportunity to go meet somebody who might be president of the United States, give them your ideas, hear from them in more than a 30-second soundbite, and you're sort of poisoning that by being prima donnas. And so part of my book, I think, was meant to show both sides of that, but also to highlight the people that I think were doing it for the right reasons.
As a writer in all your books, it seems that you've tried to go below the surface or to hit some sort of a level of where you see a genuineness of different people in all different forms, whether it's in the West or in politics, which are obviously two very different places. Is that what you're trying to reach for?
Yeah, I think that's the common thread between the three books I've written, is the finding, trying to discover who we are as Americans, trying to discover who we are as a nation, and believing that we find that in the common people and the everyday experience, and we don't find it necessarily at the top and with the celebrities and at the, you know, the very shallow surface at the top of the ocean. You know, we find it if we dig a little deeper, and it's a continuing search of me, of my own, of trying to believe in who we are and what our country's purpose is, and looking for those places where I can find it.
Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
Dayton Duncan lives in Walpole. His latest book is Miles from Nowhere, Tales from America's Contemporary Frontier. This is Perspectives. I'm Laura Kiernan. Perspectives is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The producer is Bill Rice. Our editorial assistant is Marjorie Boone, and the executive producer is Eric Niclimo. I'm Laura Kiernan from the New Hampshire Bureau of the Boston Globe. Thanks for listening, and have a good evening.